Relevant Podcast. Anytime, anywhere.
It's the week of Friday, October 30th, 2009. Ooh, and this is the Halloween edition of the Relevant Podcast. The Relevant Podcast is the audio companion to Relevant Magazine and relevantmagazine.com. I'm Cameron Strang, and here with us in our lair in Orlando, Florida, is editorial director Roxy Wieman.
Hello.
On the spook line from Virginia Beach, Virginia, is Jesse Carey.
How are you?
This is ridiculous. And on the Skype line from the fiery pit of Mordor is Adam Smith.
How is everyone doing?
So on this week's edition, we have a little bit of a theme going on. We're going to be playing only Halloween music and only talking about scary things. We have a packed podcast for you, but you expect nothing less from us anymore. We have a live in-studio performance by Deus Vale, whose album just released on iTunes nationwide last week, during Mono vs. Stereo. And we also have an interview with Justin Dillon, who's the filmmaker behind the film Call and Response, which is a fantastic and important film. So we talked to him a little bit later. And of course, we have Slices, your feedback, and up first, entertainment releases. CD's coming out on Tuesday, which is November 3rd. It's already November. It's crazy. We got Kate Earl with her self-titled release. We have Morrissey with Swords. Now, didn't Morrissey just get injured?
He did.
He collapsed on stage.
Wow. Is he okay?
Yes, he's fine. He's still brooding and and sad. Good. But he's fine.
Good.
And he is pretty vampire-like looking.
Yeah, so that's true.
It's kind of a Halloween story, too.
Yeah, it fits the Halloween theme. I think he collapsed under the weight of his own angst.
Also, kind of, we got Swayze with Let It Beat. Carrie Underwood with Play On. Joy Electric is coming out with Favorites at Play. It's probably a best of. I don't know. Maybe not. I'm not sure. It's on Tooth and Nail. And The Almost with Monster, very apropos for this time of year. And our spotlight review, or spotlight release of the week, which will be reviewed on Tuesday at relevantmagazine.com, is Weezer's Ratitude. Here's a clip.
Nothing like spotlighting our own disappointment.
That's have said that same joke since Pinkerton, but you know what? I still buy the album every
it's
time.
It's true. I know, I do too. Like a hope. Moron. It's like I get some kind of amnesia or something, you know? Every time, and you would think at some point they'd be willing to beat down my optimism, but every single time it's like, maybe this one will be the return to form.
All right. Okay, so moving on. Movies coming out next Friday. We've got a few, not many. We have Box, which...
Promising.
Yeah, what if someone gave you a box containing a button that, if pushed, would bring you $1 million, but simultaneously take the life of someone you don't know? Would you do it?
Nothing like proposing that.
In this economy.
In this economy.
Yeah. That's actually how I've been surviving here in New Zealand. I'm only getting like $20 a pop for these button pushes. You know.
Cameron Diaz and others star in that. Then we have Disney's A Christmas Carol, which is director Robert Zemeckis, who did The Polar Express. So he's doing a 3D adaptation, and Jim Carrey is in it, or I guess is the voice in it.
It's the weird animation, so it looks like him too.
Does it really?
Well, so kind of old Scrooge like.
Kind of like Tom Hanks with the Polar Express, or.
But more frightening.
Yeah. Oh,
if you can imagine that.
I can't.
Yes.
Okay, it says this 3D adaptation of the Charles Dickens classic will use the motion picture technology previously seen in the filmmaker's Beowulf.
Oh.
Interesting.
That was freaky also.
Yes, it was. Also coming out, The Fourth Kind and Men Who Stare at Goats. And I'm not sure if this is going to be good or not, but George Clooney is in it. Ewan McGregor's a reporter that delves into the world of psychic military regiments during the Iraq War. In this adaptation of the Ron Ronson book, The Men Who Stare at Goats. Kevin Spacey's in it, Jeff Bridges, and a whole bunch of people.
It looks interesting.
It looks so hilarious. Yeah. Like, the few little trailers I've seen, it make it look like the funniest thing ever.
Yeah.
Like, Coen Brothers worthy.
Well, you know? I've had the 80s jam More Than a Feeling stuck in my head for like 2 weeks, thanks to the commercials for it, too.
Speaking of trailers, we will be reviewing The Men Who Stare at Goats on Relevant. RelevantMagazine.com next Friday.
Yes.
So here is a bit of the trailer.
For the past two decades, the U.S. government has developed a top-secret unit of psychic spies. They are the Men Who Stare at Goats. Ewan McGregor is the reporter.
You're a psychic spy.
A Jedi warrior.
You're a Jedi warrior.
That's correct.
Inspired by the unbelievable true story.
We're Jedi, Bob. We don't fight with guns. We fight with our mind.
What do you mean?
Let me show you something.
Choke me.
Oh, there's too many sharp edges.
It's okay.
You can attack me.
What's with the quotation fingers? It's like saying I'm only capable of ironic attack. Sharp edges.
See, I barely moved.
I agree with you. It looks really funny/interesting.
I hope it's good.
I'm bracing myself for utter disappointment, just like Weezer. Okay, well, that'll do it for your entertainment releases. Up next, Slices.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Advent Conspiracy, showing you how to substitute consumption with compassion by practicing four simple but powerful counterculture concepts. Check it out today at AdventConspiracy.com. There's more glory to be seen
and savored through suffering. You're listening to Classic Crime. The song is Abracadavers. The video is playing right now over at Relevant.tv. Also, at the beginning of the podcast, you heard Michael Jackson's Thriller, which is also playing right now over on Relevant.tv. Nice find, Chad. Okay. nothing but the freshest hits here.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's you somehow managed to find that exclusive video.
They're spooky Halloween-themed hits.
Right. All week here at Relevant.tv, we've been playing Halloween music, so.
Wouldn't be right without it.
Okay, and not with Slices. Here's Jesse.
All right, well, this one I found particularly terrifying. There is a company called Boston Dynamics that is testing suits that are going to be used to protect soldiers in chemical warfare. Okay, so just your average chemical weapons company developing new technology, what could possibly go wrong? Mm-hmm. Well, this week they have released a video of a new robot, and it's called Pet Man, spelled like Pet Man. And I'm sure it's an acronym for something, but it doesn't say. I can't find what it stands for. But they put this video up.
Are you sure that that's how you pronounce it? It's not like a Jewish pronunciation like Silverman? You know, it's not Silverman. It could be Petman.
Like Petman?
Petman.
Yeah.
Or is the name an imperative? As in, like, hey, you, Petman.
That's the only thing the robot does.
So they released a YouTube video to display what this robot can do. And pretty much right now, it can just walk and run upright, okay? Which every time I see one of these videos of like these Japanese companies that release this big robot, you know, that costs, you know, $4 million to create, that all it can do is walk, they don't seem that intimidating. You know, they're like the white, they look like the little monies, but in robot form. Mm-hmm. This thing looks like a Terminator. It has human legs, and they're running it on a treadmill. And for some reason, it's probably the most disturbing thing I've ever seen. They have like these metal muscular legs with shoes on, and it's sprinting on a treadmill.
You know, I think it's actually less disturbing that it has shoes on. I think I find it more terrifying if a human-like robot is barefoot. Because then when it's walking across really hard terrain, I'm like, man, it's doing it barefoot.
But I think you failed to mention that it actually sweats inside the suit. It does. That's what it says right here.
What does it sweat like?
Petman will also simulate human physiology within the protective suit by controlling temperature, humidity, and sweating when necessary to provide realistic test conditions.
Yeah.
Well, that's even the worst thing about going to the battle with the robots at the end of time is that not only will we be, you know, probably come down to hand-to-hand combat, but they're going to be all sweaty, you know? So when you're like wrestling robot to death, you're covered in sweat.
A big robot bear hug, and you get sweat all over you.
Well, it's like playing basketball down at the Y, Jesse, and you've got that one guy who's just like just lathered up and slimy. Mm-hmm. And he always is the guy who wants to post up and just rub his body all over you.
That'll be Petman. And Jesse, to answer your question about what he sweats, I believe it's the tears of orphans.
So be on the lookout for Petman.
All right, then.
I was wondering how we're going to wrap that one up.
I was assuming it goes without saying that these are going to be the harbingers of the apocalypse.
Right.
But I'll just throw that out there. No. These may actually be the locusts mentioned in the Book of Revelation. I'm not sure. But I'm pretty confident they are.
And they're poised for wide release in 2012.
Yeah.
All right, Adam.
Okay, this is I've got just a couple little crime beat things. First of all, a man in Warsaw, Poland, tried to rob a bank by holding a teaspoon to the neck of a cashier, pretending it was a knife, right? Unfortunately, the women weren't fooled at all, and they actually scared the man away by screaming at him. But my thought is, okay, you're in Warsaw, Poland, and you try and rob a bank with a spoon, could you be stereotyping yourself any worse?
Adam, I'm going to throw one more a hat in the ring here.
Please do.
Yes.
Since we're all in such a good float.
Right.
All right. Not that yours wasn't good, Adam.
Hey, come on. A Polish guy tries to rob a bank, hold a bank up at spoon point. I mean, come on.
You see, it was all about the delivery. See, you just brought it home.
Yeah, exactly.
Now it's classic.
You couldn't count on us to do that.
All right. Well, police in Minnesota are offering an interesting opportunity to people who may follow the news or who may just want to give back to the police department. You know, police confiscate a lot of stuff during crimes, but very rarely do they just put it up on eBay. But a few weeks ago, a motorized Lazy Boy crashed into a parked car, and the guy driving it was drunk. So obviously they have no choice but to sell it on eBay. Now, this Lazy Boy has been the personal project of this guy for a long time, and it has a nitrous oxide booster, a parachute, headlights, and a steering wheel, as well as a stereo system.
Wait, so how fast can it go?
20 miles an hour.
Why do you need a parachute going 20 miles an hour?
That's really dangerous.
In case you drive off a cliff.
Oh, okay.
In case you want to do some Lazy Boy base jumping.
Well, I was picturing those drag races where the cars they're going so fast to come to a stop, they have to deploy the parachute.
Right.
So I don't think I just see a really, really fat guy going 20 miles an hour. I don't see the need.
this is for the most relaxed space jumping experience of your entire life.
And the best part about the eBay auction is there's been no reserve set. And I don't know if they intentionally didn't set a reserve or the cops just don't know how to use eBay. So someone may be getting the deal of a lifetime.
I think you and I both know that that thing's going to go through the roof.
Yeah, and just me mentioning it, it has already ruined my $150 bid. I know it. Yeah. And the only way I was going to get it home, I was going to fly to Minnesota and drive this back.
Well, the great thing is you could fly partway back and then parachute from the plane.
Right.
And then drive.
Exactly. While listening to my stereo system.
Yeah, now, you can still be in a sitting position the entire time, reclined.
Yeah, I can have my feet up the entire time. Now, 20 miles an hour doesn't sound like a lot, but it's something that I really want to see, you know?
Yeah, I can say anytime I've sat in a recliner, all kicks back, I probably thought anything faster than a full stop would be pretty quick for that recliner.
Yeah, any movement, even a slight movement when I'm in a Lazy Boy is pretty startling. Yeah.
Well, I have a slice. We Maya and I are parents. Everybody's Aww. Been on the on baby watch with us, so figure I'd deliver the good news. Deliver. Maya had Cohen last Friday, the 23rd. It was a planned C-section, and he's totally healthy, and she's recovering. You know, I guess it takes a while. It was major surgery and all, but we're home now, and she's doing great, and he's eaten like unbelievable amounts of food, and he's a cute kid. He has a lot of hair.
Cameron, if we can get sentimental for a moment.
Okay, please do.
Did you have the moment that everyone talks about, like when the first time you see your own child, that you have this emotion that you've never experienced before? Is that a real thing?
The first time you see him, he's usually bloody and screaming, and they're, you know, pulling them and tugging and hosing them down. And
so it's more fear and a little gross.
It's surreal. I mean, it's just, and it happens so fast. I mean, they're the first 3 minutes is just nonstop. No, I mean, they invited me to go over and I did to where they were weighing them and measuring them and doing all this stuff. But I mean, he's covered in stuff that you don't want to describe. And so no, there wasn't this like touching, like, oh, how sweet and tender my baby. No, it's like, what is going on? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's just, it's like, is that normal?
It's chaos. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone get a doctor
like
in here.
Yeah. But then after they kind of wipe him down and do that stuff, they bring him back over to Maya, and she was able to hold him on her chest while she was still in surgery for, you know, another half hour, but she was able to hold him for a few minutes, and the three of us were able to kind of meet, and that was really cool. I then was able to go with him to the recovery room while she was in surgery for another half hour. And so I got to spend about a half hour with him, and that was amazing. I was scared to touch him, you know, like he's under the warmer and different things to, you know, so I didn't get a chance to hold him and stuff until we got up into the room.
Warmer.
Yeah. There's like a,
makes it sound like a pizza or something. Yeah.
Oh, he was basking in it. Like he was, you know, getting a tan. It was like a little tanning booth. You know, it's just warm them up because they've been in, you know, they're not used to air conditioning, first of all, but to warm up their skin. And then, you know, it helps determine it. I guess if they have jaundice or something, it helps with that. But he didn't. He was red. But yeah, no. So I was with him and taking a lot of pictures and stuff. And then we went up to the room. And, you know, I rarely let him out of my hands. I mean, he's a sweet kid. And it was really cool. I stayed in the room with them for 3 days, and so we traded off and on, and it was awesome. He's a good kid. I seriously took over 1,100 pictures while we were in the hospital.
Wow.
So it was like 600 the first day, and every day I got progressively less, you know, or fewer, but I have a lot of pictures, and I've made them into galleries and slideshows and set it to music, and yeah, it's like, it's ridiculous. So. Wow.
Now that it's been a couple of days, has it really like set in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like it's real?
Yeah. Yeah. He's not going anywhere. Yeah. And he really, really looks like me, like when I was a baby. And so it's like that part of it's surreal. You know, it's not just like a baby. It's like, no, this is actually our baby, you know? Because, you know, you hold other babies. You're like, oh, yeah, that's cute. You're like, no, I see myself in this kid. It's It's surreal. It's really amazing. And
I looked through a lot of your pictures. And I was thinking, man, that's going to be a really awesome experience, but I don't know if I'm ready. So I'm thinking about starting off for the first couple years just with the Petman.
Yeah. They're going to have the baby version in a few months.
Baby Petman. Yeah.
Baby Petman.
Yeah. Petman Jr.
And it can run really fast. So, you know, I'll be like energized to like keep up with the baby, and I'll be used to like clean it up after it because the baby Petman just sweats profusely.
Yeah. It's good. It'd be good training. That or a puppy, either one, that'll train you well.
Yeah. Yeah. The puppy, you know, costs like $50. The Petman, will cost me, probably about $500,000, but
price notwithstanding, I'd say the big difference is that the puppy isn't filled with soulless murderous rage.
I was gonna say there's only a small likelihood I'll wake up dead with the puppy.
Yeah, you're very rarely going to find the puppy like wake up in the middle of the night to see the puppy standing over you with one of your kitchen knives.
The most terrifying sound is like you wake up in the middle of the night and you hear like a treadmill running. Here's your
Petman.
I told you to stay off that.
He's getting stronger.
It's like a gremlin.
To kick me extra hard.
Oh my goodness.
Those cold, soulless eyes with the headband over them to keep the sweat out of them.
Because they don't have eyelashes or eyebrows.
I would assume.
Having a baby, nothing like having a Petman Jr., just so you know.
I do have to ask, though, Cameron, now that Baby Watch 2009 has come to its conclusion.
Baby Watch.
How are we doing number one on Snubwatch 2009? And number two, has Cohen snubbed you at any point yet?
I'm sure it's going to happen as he gets older. Yeah, no, Cohen hasn't snubbed me yet.
He's probably about like 15 years away from, you know, getting too cool.
Yeah.
Snubbed. But
I can't see that.
It might be good to put him on the list preemptively.
That's the thing. I can't imagine the day where this kid and I aren't going to be close, but I know it's going to happen, and that makes me sad.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm holding them and I'm just like, I am going to show you the world. I'm going to teach you so many things, and I'm going to be your best friend. And then one day you're going to hate me.
Aww. Oh. And the cat's in the cradle, so and the sad. Silver spoon, little boy blue, and the man in the moon.
And then you'll be forced to get like just a Petman to fill the void.
Yeah, to fill the void.
Or to keep an eye on him.
Oh. Yeah, Petman, follow him, and he just runs after the car everywhere, sweating.
Parenthood's nice. I'm 3.5 days into it. I highly recommend it. Okay, all right. Well, on that note, we'll wrap up Slices. Up next, Deus Veil. Listening to the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, the song is Heads Will Roll, and the video is playing right now over at relevant.tv. By the way, right now, I wanted to mention before I introduce Deus Veil that if you subscribe to Relevant right now, you get a free t-shirt with your subscription. It's limited edition, supplies are limited, so we don't actually know how long they'll last. But if you go to relevantmagazine.com/freetee, and that's freetee, free tee. And you'll get 6 issues or 12 issues, 1 year, 2 year. Either way, you get a free t-shirt when you subscribe. So go check that out. Well, Deus Veil is a favorite here of the Relevant staff. They actually have a brand new album that came out last week on Mono vs. Stereo Records. It's available nationwide in iTunes. It's called Birds in Cages. Our very own Jesse Pinico did the artwork for the album. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if you knew that. He did it, I guess, right before he joined our staff. He had been working with the band and stuff. So it's an amazing album and really good artwork. You can check them out at deusvail.com. It's deasvail.com. Here is Deus Veil performing The Great Physician.
I've closed my eyes.
This is Deus Vale. Check them out at deusvale.com. Listening to The Killers, the song is Bones. Get it? See the whole thing? Heads will roll, Bones, Abracadabra's Thriller.
Ooh.
It's spooky. It's the Relevant Podcast Spooktacular 2009. Bones is, the video for Bones is playing right now over at relevant.tv. Recently, producer, filmmaker Justin Dillon came by our office. He's the man behind the documentary Call and Response, which started, well, it had a theater run last year, and yeah, it has been going around and is screened around the country, and actually was just had a theater run in Australia last week, I think, actually. Mm-hmm. You can check out the film at callandresponse.com. It's a documentary that looks at a kind of a very unspoken issue, that there are more slaves today than ever before in human history. It goes deep undercover where slavery is thriving, from the child brothels of Cambodia to the slave brick kilns of rural India, to reveal that in 2007, slave traders made more money than Google, Nike, and Starbucks combined. Hmm. He brings together luminaries on the issue, ranging from Cornel West to Madeleine Albright to Daryl Hannah, Julia Ormond, to Ashley Judd, Nicholas Kristof, prominent political, cultural figures. And then also artists, Moby, Natasha Bedingfield, Cold War Kids, Modest Yahoo, Imogen Heap, Talib Kweli, Pfeiffer Fighting, Switchfoot, Nickel Creek, Tom Petty's Heartbreakers, and a lot more. It's a remarkable film. It's unlike one that you've ever seen before. And our very own Ashley Emmert talked to Justin when he was in our office a couple weeks ago. Here is that interview.
Part of the traditional call and response is when you are beckoned by the freedom and the music, that it's up to you to not just find your voice, but to share your voice with others.
I am an abolitionist, a glory in the name. Though now by slavery's minions' hand and covering up with shame.
So you have the film Call and Response and the website. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how what prompted you to start or to really seek this issue out?
You know, I think that the issue really found me. And I always hesitate to call it a cause because that sounds like something you can pick up and put down. The issue of modern-day slavery is something that is both new and extremely old. What excites me about it is that I think we have the tools to actually make a bigger dent in slavery than any generation ever has. For me, personally, you know, I came in across the issue first through kind of reading about it or having some kind of media expose me to it, which was a New York Times article, and then seeing it for myself. And a lot of times you don't have that opportunity to have both. But for me, it was learning about it. And what I thought was key about learning about it was it doesn't look like the history we have in our eighth grade textbooks. You know, it's something altogether different. And to be honest, it's almost a little bit more sinister in the way that it operates. And so learning what modern day slavery is, and then I took a trip to Russia, and I was playing music in Russia and started meeting these girls that were being offered these opportunities to come to the West as domestics and models and whatnot. And the same offers that they were being given, I had just read about a few months earlier in this magazine. So had I not known that, had I not known what it looks like and how it works, I don't know if I would have recognized it. And that's why I think slavery is getting is able to be so successful today. It's because people don't know what to call it. And because of that cloak, it's worse today than it ever was before.
Blues, rhythm and blues, hip-hop, jazz, it's an expression of a people raising their voices in catastrophic, traumatic circumstances. You start in your situation. And black folk have always started with the catastrophic. Slavery, Jim Crow, lynching, devaluation, degradation, subjugation, and so forth. But most importantly, the music serves as a truth teller. Because you see, in the end, though, brother, black music is fundamentally about unarmed truth. It's about unconventional love. It's about unadulterated justice. It's about unadorned beauty.
I was forced to be a war child. I'm a war child.
Music is a really big part of Call and Response. It goes back to the songs that the slaves sang out in the fields, and now the music is a big part of Call and Response, what you're doing, the movie, and you brought in a bunch of different musicians and artists. Why do you think music has such a connection to that?
Well, I think that was a big journey for me in making the film and understanding why, as a musician, this is a connection. I think some of it, too, is why do white people love black music? I think there's something to understand there. Why is it that people with moderate to high levels of comfort and acquisition want to engage the music and the experience of the oppressed? And that's not just a modern thing. That's all of popular music is built on that, is built on people that are always looking back, you know, all the way back from, you know, Zeppelin looking at the blues to the Beatles looking at the blues, you know, all the way back. The reality is that, and what I've come to realize in making this film is that even down to just verse and chorus, which is basically a play on tension and release, you know, we didn't have verses and choruses before we had slavery here in the United States. We actually didn't have that modality. We didn't have that tool set. It came out of the music of the oppressed people here. That was, in a sense, called call and response. So even that, even in that part of it, we partake in of slavery, even when we listen to a modern pop song. I threw a song on the phonograph, and Lucy start wilding. Chips start piling, watching Lou start flying. Gucci start piling up, she lived
designer plush. Star lining up the coach, she can find a rush. What story is symbolic to you of what call and response has been and what God has been doing with it?
I think I'm a bit, and this is going to sound like a lofty title, but I'm realizing that I'm more of a social justice anarchist than I am, a leader or an agent. I'm so much more about bottom-up movements and grassroots movements than top-down. And I'm coming to respect and believe that you need both, but it's usually, history typically looks at a few people and says, well, those are the ones that made the difference, and there's no recognition of the people who actually got it started, the people who were messy or weren't popular or no one knew about. And what I'm seeing from the film is group after group after group getting started that are just doing these bottom-up movements based on what they're interested in. It's kids that are interested in fashion, and they're figuring out ways to engage the fashion industry. It's kids that are interested in sports, and they're figuring out how to use their games and their sporting events to affect slavery. It's like when you see what I call open source activism, where everybody gets to play, gets to put their code on top of it, then you don't actually... It's scary because you don't control it. It's not like you can say, we're going here. But it's also very exciting because you have no idea what's going to come out of it. And it's like jazz, you know. It's like you don't know where it's going to go. And that's what I love about it. And I wholeheartedly believe that that is what activism looks like for the 21st century. I don't believe it's a top-down movement at all for any issue, and particularly for this one. I believe that it's people getting together and figuring it out.
William James used to say, indifference is the one trait that makes the very angels weep. Indifference is the essence of inhumanity. And anybody who's indifferent to the enslavement going on right now around the world, that's the essence of inhumanity, lacking humanity.
You know, we have 18,000 people being brought in to be slaves in the United States every year. That's a lot of people. There's anywhere from 250,000 on up that are actually operating under duress without any opportunity to walk away here in the United States. Now, we have some fancy words for those two things. We call them immigration and prostitution. And we like to put things in boxes. And it's my job, and I've taken it on as my job, is to recapture the vernacular of slavery and say, no, actually, we need another box. There are people that are enslaved. It's, yes, they may be operating in the sex industry, or they may be operating in the food industry or in the service industry. But if their passport's been taken away, their visa's been taken away, if they are here under duress, if they're trying to pay off a loan and they can't walk away without paying off a loan, that's slavery, hands down. And until we acknowledge that as a public, that that's actually, first of all, it is against the law. Second of all, it's absolutely morally wrong that people can force people to work like this. Then we won't be able to build that box. But the truth is, it's happening here. I've gone undercover into cantinas and into massage parlors and found girls that are there against their will, but they're never going to jump out and go, hey, I'm a slave, get me out of here. You know, they've been brainwashed, they've been emotionally wrecked, of course physically abused. So it's far more complex than I think we'd like to believe the issue is.
If you're committed to truth, committed to love, then you're committed to fairness. If you really love somebody, then you hate that they're being treated unfairly.
What are some changes that people can make on a local level that can impact also, in addition to their local realm, but also the global realm and this issue across countries
see,
away?
When I was making the film, that was the question that I had the entire time. I was like, great, awesome. You can get a bunch of people in the room and get them all together saying, that's right, slavery's wrong, but what do you do with that? That is like, that's like pure energy. So part of what, you know, me and my team did with Call and Response is we put a lot of our creative acumen and what little finances we had into our website. And we wanted to be able to create activist platforms where people can use their discretionary time and resources to affect change on small scales that on a small level at first, but that scales out. So let me give you an example. We've been talking about sex trade, but you know, a big, big part, in fact, probably larger part of the issue is forced labor. And this is something that actually does affect all of us. The sex trade probably doesn't affect most of us, hopefully not. But the forced labor side does. Everything that we use, from our cell phones to our clothes to the coffee we drink, there is forced labor in all of that, and it's just as gruesome. Reality is, this is something we can do because we're the last link in the supply chain. So one of the things, you know, you're looking at that, it's like, wow, you know, global multinational corporate supply chains, how do we affect that? Well, you just yank them. You yank the chain if you're the end of it. And so we created a platform called, a website called chainstorereaction.com, where we built all these, we took all the brands that we could put together, and we created a letter writing campaign to their corporate social responsibility VPs or their CEOs. We have 700 companies up there. Basically, it's just a consumer letter directly to them, just saying, hey, you know, you make stuff, I buy your stuff. We have a relationship. I'm sure you know that there's slavery going on, and I'm sure you know that it's far beyond the factory floors and the sweatshops that you're doing such a good job cleaning up. We actually have to get down to source materials. I want to know that you're going to do that. Please sign this survey. Very simple, you know, signed your friend, the abolitionist. What happens is every time an email goes out underneath their brand, it tallies how many letters have been sent. And so we've sent the community sent out over 35,000 emails, and 50 companies from Dolce & Gabbana to Gap to Levi's have come back and signed our survey and said, we're going to engage this further. That may seem like a small step, but when you get a multinational company to step up on something like this, that's huge. That goes everywhere. And that's leveraging something that you do every day, which is purchase things. You know, those are the kind of tools, and that's one of them. We've got several more, but those are the kind of tools that I think this generation needs that become part of our lives, not just some place we go to and visit or learn more about, but just use them every day, using these tools. So Chain Story Action is the best example I can give.
If you could only tell someone one story, like one inspiring story that you've come across from a modern day slave, someone that you've met, someone that you've heard about, what would you tell the person?
There was a girl, I don't want to give her name, but she's someone I met. I didn't put her in the film, but at 13 years old, she was living in Queens, and she was having a hard time at home. She ran away. And what a lot of people don't know is that usually within 24 to 48 hours, runaways, somewhere in that time frame, most runaways are solicited by a pimp. And that was the case for this girl. As a matter of fact, she was solicited in Queens, and then she was trafficked into Brooklyn. And she didn't quite know what was happening. He kind of courted her on the internet, and it's a very messy story. But she ended up meeting him, and he was very kind and sweet to her, and ended up taking her to the house, and it was just a house full of girls that he has prostituting. She's 13. Pretty soon she found herself being forced to strip and to prostitute herself. Meantime, her mother is trying to find her and is not getting any help from the police. By the way, this is an African-American family. That made it a little bit tougher. Searched and searched and searched for, I think, a couple months. Finally, the daughter called her mother, mother was freaked out, and then the daughter saw that the trafficker and the pimp was driving by, and she had to jump off the phone, and he caught her and took her back. The mother went to the police. Police didn't help. So the mother herself triangulated the cell phone towers and figured out the area that her daughter was in and just stayed there and kept putting up posters and asking everyone she knew. And eventually, she found her daughter. And this last June, she graduated high school. And it touched me because, and I was invited to the ceremony. It touched me because you see that to anyone else, that would just look like another runaway story in a black family. But when you understand what this truly is and how much more complex this is, you realize that this girl wasn't just being prostituted, or if you'd seen her on the street, you would have one perspective, but there's such a deeper, more tragic story behind that. And it really makes me touched that something like that, a story like that, as bad as it was, can be redeemed through, you know, fortunately through a mother's love. And it's my hope that we can do that for all the children that are runaways or that are being prostituted here in the United States. And then hopefully we can do that abroad as well.
You love those folk who are enslaved in Africa and Asia and Europe and America and so forth. You don't want them to be mistreated. You don't want them to be abused. Absolutely. So you end up fighting for justice even though you started playing your guitar. Because music's about helping folk. But it helps them by getting them to dance, getting them to move, getting them to think. So that I'm stronger when you find your voice because I need your voice. And you're stronger mm-hmm. my voice, I need my voice. And in the end, we're still gonna die. In the end, we still might
right.
not triumph,
right.
but we on the move. And never forget, justice is what love looks like in public.
You're listening to Dead Man's Bones. The song is My Body's a Zombie for You. Wow. The video is playing right now on Relevant.
That's the most romantic thing I've ever
heard. All right. Anyway, Deus Vale, you know, I mentioned their album came out last week. It's called Birds in Cages. They also have a MySpace that you can peruse. It's myspace.com/Deus Vale. Here is Deus Vale performing Puzzles and Pieces.
Careful, they're plotting their best escapes for fear of this whole place burning down. Puzzles and pieces are tangled in cages, and they rattle and shake their bones, and they grew from the earth. So still, in a world that seems to be built on pillars and numbers or days, with the hopes of falling in love before we have learned to love ourselves. And objects, they fall in our view of words, and we're whittled away by zeros. One, somebody save us, and nobody asks this. But where does our heart live on? And dreaming of dangers, dream of. So stand in a world that seems to be built on pillars and numbers or days, with the hopes of falling in love before we have learned just to stand in a world that seems to be built on pillars and numbers or days. Can we love if we can't love ourselves? Can't love ourselves.
You're listening to Death Cab for Cutie. The song is Meet Me on the Equinox. And there, you know, that's not spooky per se, except for the fact that it's in the movie, the upcoming movie Twilight, or Twilight movie. So there is actually a Twilight-filled version and a Twilight-free version on Relevant TV. Because
we knew you'd like that.
Yeah.
Or hate it.
The Twilight-free version is my preference. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so it is now time for your feedback. Okay, last week we asked you on the podcast for your favorite guilty pleasure album. So you went over to the podcast episode page at relevantmagazine.com, and you, in the comment section, answered the question and told us your favorite guilty pleasure albums, and here are some of our favorites, including clips.
I was first scanning the list just a minute ago, and I saw, you know, I was reading really quickly.
Wait,
so I only read
Jesse,
my guilty.
Jesse, you're breaking the illusion that we spend hours and hours poring over selecting our favorites by saying
you're hurting
several
people.
Days ago.
Several days ago, as you were preparing for the podcast.
Yeah, in the wee hours of the morning. I usually stay up about three nights a week writing material.
Shows.
I workshop a lot of these jokes at a class, which I pay people a lot of money to attend. So it was during that time that I ran across this. That's what I meant by a few minutes ago. So I was scanning the list, and I thought that I read my favorite guilty pleasure is Street Magic. And I thought, well, that's not an album, and there's nothing guilty about loving Street Magic. Mm. That's just pure pleasure. It turns out it said my guilty pleasure album is Strange Magic, the best of Electric Light Orchestra. By, of course, Electric Light Orchestra. I don't know who Electric Light Orchestra is.
Wait,
but
Jesse, you don't know who Electric Light Orchestra is?
No.
Oh, man. You'd know them if you heard them, because they did so many great 70s tunes.
Like?
Evil Woman. Evil Woman. What about Sweet Talking Woman? You got to slow down, sweet talking woman. You got me running, run. You got me searching. Anything? Not doing it for you?
Well, now we don't need to actually play the clip, so we're good.
This works better.
Thanks.
We'll just have Adam sing them.
I would have rather Adam demonstrate a Street Magic than Strange Magic, though, any day of the week.
Okay, and what's some of the other ones?
Ace of Base, the
yes.
sign.
No,
again.
All right, yes. Here's a clip of Ace.
Some of these people didn't understand guilty pleasure because they put something that isn't really a guilty pleasure at all. You know,
like what? Snobs.
Like someone said, Woven Hand. It's like, that's not a guilty pleasure.
Hmm.
That's just a good indie band.
Well, Garrett S., when I think of guilty pleasure, I think of this band, Styx.
Yeah.
And they particularly mention the song, Come Sail Away.
All right, here's a clip.
Well, Chester Copperpots.
No, Chester Copperpots.
Yeah, I love that guy.
That was our backup name for Cohen.
You were going to name it after this guy, right?
Yeah.
He said that it just in general, Christmas music, which he begins listening to in July, okay. Which I can kind of relate to that. I actually listened to a couple Christmas tunes today, and I felt pretty bad about it.
Yeah.
All right, here's what do you want us to play? What makes you feel the worst?
Anything by Bing Crosby.
Okay.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose.
You shouldn't feel guilty about that.
Yeah, you shouldn't feel guilty about this at
all.
Now
Mariah Carey's, maybe. Or Jessica Simpson's Boys to Men.
Boys to Men? What are you talking about? That's awesome. Let it snow.
No, I'm going to stick with Roxy on this one.
No way. Oh, that Boyz II Men Christmas album meant a lot to me in my college career as well, so leave me alone.
You get very emotional when the Boyz
II Men. Those college years.
I have very specific memories associated to Let It Snow. Next.
Someone said Hall & Oates. Once again, I don't understand what you're ashamed about.
Adam, you can't just, you're just angry with these people, like, because you actually like all of this music.
Hall & Oates are great.
I saw Oates in the mall, the same mall where I was snubbed by Toby Mac.
And did Daryl Hall have the decency to make eye contact with you?
No, it was Oates. It was the Oates guy. No, okay. On this one mall outing, I walk in the front door and saw John Tesh. He was surrounded by people. He's about 3 foot taller than anybody else. He is an Adonis. Then later was snubbed by Toby Mac, and then going up and up escalator went. Past going down a down escalator, Oates, in the same mall experience in Atlanta.
And you recognize John Oates?
Yes.
I said, how would you not recognize John Oates?
Exactly.
I think I told this story in the first couple years of the podcast. I had a friend who thought that the band name Hall & Oates was the words hauling oats. Like, oh, I'm hauling a big sack of oats here, you know? And it wasn't until later in life, I think his college years, that he realized it was a guy named Hall and a guy named Oates, and it wasn't hauling oats.
Wow. Wow. You know what? Actually, this whole topic makes me think of a good question of the week for this week. So let's go ahead and toss it. That's your answers to last week's one. Here's this week's editorial question of the week. So I want to know what you dressed up as for Halloween this year, mm-hmm. or the best one you've ever done.
Yes.
If you didn't happen to do it this year.
Or how about the best idea you've ever had, but never had the guts to do?
Oh, well, I've got one. I mean, it wasn't that I didn't have the guts to do it. It's that I wasn't there that day. The whole zombie Goulet thing.
Yeah, that's true.
The year it was that Goulet died the day before Halloween. Literally the day before.
And so you made the most tasteful decision possible. Yeah.
Well, but that's the time when it would have been the absolute funniest. You know? It's like you can't do it any other year and have it have the same impact as the very next day.
Because then the previous year you come as Robert Goulet. Yeah. So then the following year you would come as Zombie Goulet.
Zombie Goulet, because he died the night before.
That's good. Wow. So. One year, I will not divulge what I went dressed as, but one year in college, I sparked a miniature race riot.
I remember that story.
Oh, yeah.
You incited a race riot on a college campus.
Yeah, so I know what not to do in the future. Yeah, but I won't go into that.
How many strange Michael Jackson costumes are we going to see? Is it too soon to even mention the idea?
No, people will. Sad. It's going to be a lot. That's unoriginal. Yeah.
You know what's a big seller this year?
You know.
Is the Kate Gosselin wig.
Seems really boring. Yeah.
You just wear high-waisted pants and a blonde wig.
Blonde wig.
Yeah.
Just mom jeans and then just get
eight dolls.
See, how upset with you would you be if like you bought like eight dolls, okay, and you were trying to look like Kate and you were really pumped about looking like Kate Gosselin and you had your eight dolls and someone was like, are you the Octo Mom? Would that like, be the biggest slap effect ever? No, the eight dolls are the plus eight, because that actually happened to me this week and it wasn't even Halloween.
Crushing.
I'm going to go as Petman.
Yeah.
I'm going to be sweaty profusely the whole night. I mean, my costume is just like, I'm just going to wear normal stuff with like jogging shoes. And I'm just going to be really, really sweaty the whole night. I'd be like, dude, you guys didn't read about Petman?
I'm Petman.
Tell us what you're going to go dressed as or what your best all-time costume was, go over to the podcast episode page at relevantmagazine.com and post it right there in the comments. Next week, we will read our favorites here on the podcast. Well, with that, we will wrap it up. Many thanks to Deus Vale for coming through. Again, their brand new album just came out last week. It's called Birds in Cages. It's available nationwide on Mono versus Stereo, and our very own Jesse Pinico did the artwork. You can check them out at deusvale.com. And thanks to Justin Dillon for coming through. The film is Call and Response. It's talking about slave trafficking and modern-day slavery. The website is www.callandresponse.com. Go check it out. It's an important film. Well, with that, we'll wrap it. I am Cameron Strang.
I'm Roxy Wieman.
I'm Adam Smith.
I'm Jesse Carey, otherwise Batman.
We'll see you next week.
And I'm tolling the bell of your eternal destruction across the land. Because I represent a whole new breed of Christian of today. And I'm authorized and deputized to blow you clean away. I've got a weapon with two bullets that overcome all sin and crud. One bullet is called the word of my testimony, and the other one's called the blood. Satan, bite the dust.
Relevant Podcast. Anytime, anywhere.
Having a baby, nothing like having a Pet Man Jr., just so you know.